You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to today's Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey, and I'll be joined shortly by co-host Dennis Wussman. We might think we know a lot about longevity. What does it take to live to 100? But it's more than just diet and exercise. Our guest today will shed some light on what are some of the other factors that need to be top of mind if that's our goal. Marta Zaraska is a science journalist whose work has been published in The Washington Post, Scientific American, New Scientist, and The Atlantic. Her new book, Growing Young, How Friendship, Optimism, and Kindness Can Help You Live to 100, was recently published and received a number of notable endorsements. Dan Buettner, author of Blue Zones, Emerin Meyer, Mind-Gut Connection, and Sean Anker, who's written several notable books on happiness. Growing Young is a research-driven case for why optimism, kindness, and strong social networks will keep us living longer than any fitness tracker or superfood. Marta has visited over 80 countries around the world, and she's lived in 6 of them. She joins us today from a tiny French village where she lives with her husband and daughter. Marta, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So what inspired you to write your new book, Growing Young?
I mean, it just came naturally out of my research as a science journalist. I was writing for Scientific American and The Washington Post, covering topics such as nutrition and health and psychology as well. And the more I read about those things, and I've been reading tons of research scientific papers as part of my job, the more I started coming across studies that were showing me that the way I was approaching physical health and longevity myself, even personally in my personal life, was perhaps not the best, because I started coming across research that was showing me that nutrition and exercise was not necessarily the most important thing I should be doing. So I got intrigued and I started digging deeper into that. And after reading about 600 research papers and talking to dozens of scientists, I completely changed the way I see the importance of nutrition and exercise versus such soft drivers of health, such as kindness, optimism, friendship, and involvement in community. And not to say that diet and exercise are not important, but we sometimes put too much importance on them, and especially on certain parts, such as fad diets or miracle foods and supplements, whereas we completely forget about the other things, exactly like kindness or optimism.
So I appreciate the research and the scientists that you interviewed, and your book shows us really the science behind longevity. And as you mentioned, diet and exercise are important, but it goes way beyond that. Where might some of us, maybe even some of us on this podcast, might be overinvesting, and where might we be underinvesting?
I mean, so in general, I think a lot of people are overinvesting in diet and exercise. So, you know, eating healthy is in fact quite simple. So I just really love how Michael Pollan once said, he said, eat food, mostly plants, not too much. And it's basically it, you know, just eat your veggies, don't overindulge in fast food, and do some physical exercise. But we just spend so much time and so much money in reading about fad diets and miracle foods and supplements and herbs and vitamins and purchasing exercise gadgets and exercise apps and so on and so on. And, you know, I've been there myself. When I lived in US, I lived in Philadelphia and very, very near a very big Whole Foods. And I was a very frequent customer and I spent lots of time and lots of money there. And now I would know better, I guess, I hope. And we really spend so much time on these things, whereas some of them have really sometimes no effect on our health at all. For example, omega-3 fatty acids or vitamin C, they have no effect on your longevity basically at all. And some things, such as multivitamin pills, can actually have negative health effects. This has been shown in research over and over. And yet we still go for those things, completely forgetting, for example, things like looking for purpose in life, which actually does matter for our longevity and health a lot.
I'm just writing a prediction for myself about how often my wife will play this podcast around me over and over and over again, because I've heard those messages actually from her as well. So you write a lot about mindset and you mentioned purpose. I'm curious also about how do optimism and pessimism potentially affect longevity?
Oh, they are extremely important. So there is so much research showing that optimism can add you anywhere from 4 to 10 years of life. And especially that number 10 years keeps reappearing in studies over and over. For example, Catholic nuns, which are a perfect group to study because, you know, they all live in basically the same environment, right, their whole lives, especially those who enter very, very young. And there was a study exactly done like that. And they eat the same thing. They wake up at the same hour. They live in the same place doing exactly the same things. And there was one famous study that analyzed their diaries, and those who are using the most cheerful language, optimistic language, outlived those who are using very gloomy, you know, pessimistic words in their writing by exactly about 10 years. And the same was shown, for example, on autobiographies of famous psychologists, on even orangutans in zoos, you know, when they are evaluated by their zookeepers, those who have the most cheerful, outgoing personalities outlive the more pessimistic, gloomy orangutans by 10 years as well. So it's kind of keeps coming back to that 10 years.
You mentioned before too about supplements. Curious, in the US at least, we can favor the quick fix. We're always looking for, as you mentioned, that magic pill. What did you learn from the research about superfoods and supplements?
So basically that at best, they do nothing to your health and longevity. And at worst, they can be truly, really harmful. For example, there is this miracle food or supplement from Pacific Islands called kava. And it's supposed to be a natural anti-anxiety medication. It's supposed to treat depression, protect you against Alzheimer's disease, and so on and so on. There are supposed to be lots of miracle properties to this particular plant. And yet, you know, it's one of the most dangerous things that you could ingest. There have been connected cases in Canada, UK, France to very serious toxicity, including liver failure. So there are now warnings on those products in certain countries. And this is the same with many other miracle plants or herbs that we are taking. They are just not tested. They are not certified. These are not like drugs that have to go through trial after trial after trial. Basically, nobody really knows what's in them. And sometimes they are contaminated by heavy metals, for instance, like mercury or pharmaceuticals. You really don't know what you're ingesting when you are taking those things. And even vitamins, we now know that they act in our bodies, is not the same as when you ingest those things in a natural way, where they are mixed with other components. And in many cases, they're actually harmful. So a very large study on physicians taking multivitamin pills have shown that they actually live shorter than those who are not taking supplements like that.
Marta, why do you think people focus more on these quick fixes versus the things we're talking about here?
I mean, I think it's just simpler. We like easy fixes in our culture. That's just the way our culture is, I guess. And also because there is money involved. You know, somebody's trying to sell you something. When we are talking about exactly kava or other miracle foods or miracle supplements or multivitamins or exercise gadgets, somebody is selling you something, meaning there is marketing involved, there is PR, there are interests for somebody wants you to want those things, right? And when we are talking about friendship, for example, so meeting with your friends for a walk, or about kindness, like opening doors to someone, there is nothing to sell here, then that's why we don't hear about it, because there is just no business in it. And I think it's sad, but that's just the way it is.
So science over marketing.
Yeah.
And recognizing that there's probably a science behind marketing, as we know. There are so many things that I really loved in reading your book. And one of the things I love about it is that you emphasize citing peer-reviewed meta-analyses, which are the gold standards of research. So it's very solid sources you're relying upon. Another is that you traveled personally extensively and you did hands-on testing of some of the research for yourself in your own life. What are some of your favorite stories and experiences from researching the book?
I mean, you're right. I certainly had lots of fun. I went to a longevity camp in Portugal. I visited a cuddling or hugging center in Poland. I took part in research which involves catching wild mice in Oxford. There was a lot of fun involved. I think one of the most interesting things I've done was the research on kindness that I've done with cooperation with scientists from King's College London. And what we've done is that for a week, I had to measure my cortisol levels 3 times a day, which that was actually a pretty nasty part because I had to chew on those horrible cotton swabs 3 times a day and for 2 minutes, which sounds like nothing, but it's unbelievably unpleasant. And then on 3 days out of that week where I was to do kind acts. So in the morning, I would sit down and think what nice things I can do today. So for example, I baked some cookies for my husband to take to work, or I was very careful to let people in traffic ahead of me. I bought a sandwich for some homeless family, you know, things like that. Just even the planning part was really, really pleasant. Just thinking, you know, how I can be kind today. It was really awesome. And on the other 4 days, it was just my, you know, my regular life. And then I sent all those cotton swabs with my saliva basically in them into the lab at King's College London, and they analyzed it for cortisol, the stress hormone. And afterwards, they calculated everything and showed me the charts, because it's not as simple as just having low or high levels of cortisol. It's about how it changes throughout the day. And they could really see very clearly that on the days when I was engaged in loving this, in this kind of kind acts, my cortisol response was much healthier than on the other days, no matter how much stress I had. Because actually on one of those days when I was involved in kindness, it was very stressful for me for personal reasons. And yet my cortisol was acting much more in my much healthier patterns, most likely because of all that kindness, because there is actual research on bigger samples than one that shows exactly the same things, meaning that if people engage in kindness, their stress response is much healthier, their body acts in their fight and flight response is much healthier, and their healthier cortisol levels, and basically it boosts their health.
And thanks for sharing that. And so it sounds like you've really incorporated a lot of these findings into your own day-to-day life.
I'm trying to do my best. I'm not always, you know, succeeding. Sometimes I forget myself and follow some internet links to some new fad diet or something. But I am trying to think about these lessons and basically just, you know, trying to change your perspective and think about certain behaviors also as health behaviors. For example, in the past, mm-hmm. I like running and I run a lot. And I used to also run half marathons, and I was planning to do so this year as well before coronavirus craze. But I decided not to because I realized at some point that the preparation would take so much time away from my family and from simply sitting on the couch with my husband that it would actually be, I'm not even saying about my mental health, but it would be worse for my actual physical health, because if I abandoned my marriage to running, that would not be good. So I actually considered the sitting on the couch with my husband part also as health behavior, because we know that high quality romantic relationship is extremely important, actually the most important thing for your health. And I'm still running, but not as much as I would have if I were preparing for a half marathon.
And I have to say that you have two phenomenal charts in your book. And if someone's listening to this and has the book, you want to go to page 100 and 101. And just a personal recommendation, these two charts are worth the price of the book by far. The rest of the book is great as well, but these two charts really get at the heart of it. And these charts show which things lower and which things raise mortality risk in two categories based on your reading of the research. It's a very valuable list. Could you please highlight a few of these that may surprise our listeners?
Yes. So as I just mentioned, the single most important thing you can do for your health and longevity is to have a happy romantic relationship, which usually means marriage, but not necessarily. Just as long as it's committed, that's all that's necessary. And it can lower your mortality risk by 49%. And just to compare, exercise means anywhere from 23 to 33%. So 49 versus 23, 33. And eating 6 portions of fruits and vegetables, that's 26. And again, marriage was 49%. So you can see that really the impact of happy romantic relationship is much higher than any exercise routine and or any miracle foods or perfect diet even won't be the same impact. And the second thing is having a large social network. So basically being connected with other people, neighbors, friends, family, just being a social person. And that means 45% lower mortality risk. So once again, higher than exercise or fruit and vegetable intake. But even things like exactly I mentioned before, having a purpose in life, that lowers your mortality risk by 17%, which may be lower than the exercise or or food intake, but much higher, for example, than being overweight, which actually, that surprisingly can, in some studies, make you live longer. But we are just talking, just to make sure, we're just talking about a little bit chubby, not morbidly obese. But there is research that shows that either it has no impact on your longevity or actually can even make you live longer.
So, Marta, we're having this conversation during the pandemic, which we clearly have not handled as well here in the U.S. compared to where you live in Europe. What's one thing from your book that you might recommend to help people who are still in or returning to quarantine life?
So certainly, you know, it's a very tricky thing, the social isolation in terms of coronavirus, because we know that social isolation is really, really bad for our health, including for our antiviral response. There are studies showing that when people are socially isolated, they are much more prone to getting sick after contracting a virus, a cold virus, than when they are actually connected when surrounded by others. So it is a very difficult situation. Of course, I'm absolutely not saying don't socially distance, because we need to do that. And here in France, we've been in an extremely strict lockdown for 56 days when we couldn't leave my house without a special permission, and then only for 0.6 miles outside of my house. So it was very strict. But certainly, you know, social isolation is very, very bad for our health. You know, even not getting hugs, which we are told to, we are not allowed right now, has been connected to poorer health outcomes and the lower immune system health. So these are really difficult topics. But still, I believe that there are things that we can do. For example, call instead of texting. So there is research showing that when we text versus call, we don't get the same boost of the social hormone oxytocin, so the love hormone, from the interaction. When we hear the voice of the other person, this actually activates certain parts in our brain and causes this release of oxytocin, which does not only make us feel kind of fuzzy and warm, but also has very direct health effects, for example, on inflammation or on your bone health. So instead of texting or social media messaging, just pick up the phone or, you know, Skype and call other people. And also kindness, you know, kindness is, as I've mentioned before, has really powerful effects on our health as well. And there are ways in which we can be kind to others and connect to our community. As you know, it can be as simple as letting other people pass ahead of you in traffic. That is already a kind act that can boost those systems. And for example, again, here in France, when we were in lockdown, I really had a feeling that our community was coming back together really very strongly. For example, there was a movement when people were leaving pictures and happy messages on their garbage bins with like rainbows and flowers and so on, and saying merci, so thank you, to the garbage collectors. And I think, you know, such a simple thing and completely safe in terms of coronavirus, and yet makes others feel better and the community connected.
I imagine this has a strong impact also on anyone at any age. So I'm very sensitive to younger children. I have two grandchildren. And I see the fact that they're not attending school anymore, so they don't have during this particular time, that they don't have the interaction with their friends. And even hugging has become like, I do hip hugs, which I feel like so weird. I just don't, you know, it's so uncomfortable, like what to do. But I was curious about your perspective or any of your research has shown anything about that this not only impacts adults, but it probably can have a strong impact on children. I'm just curious.
It does, you know, all this research shows that it has the same impact on children as well. And, you know, we know that aging doesn't start at 30, 40 or 60. Actually, yeah. Aging starts from the moment you are born, or even before you are born, because our telomeres shorten the fastest in the first 4 years of life. So definitely the same things have an enormous impact on children. The fact that they cannot hug, that they cannot talk, then they cannot socially connect is extremely worrisome. And you know, we have to try to do everything possible to make them feel connected to others and allow them to have at least some semblance of community or connection to their friends, and however possible.
So, Marta, we talked about the magic pills, the quick fixes, something that is something definitely to avoid. But you write about the opposite, and that's building longevity habits. What are some of the key habits you'd recommend that people focus on creating? Where should people start?
I think it's just changing your perspective. You know, when I think about diet and exercise, which again, still important, but it's very much inwards looking. So it's very much about me, me, me kind of thing, you know, my body, my diet, my exercise. But when I think about those soft longevity habits, it's more about looking outwards, outside of yourself, thinking about other people. So, you know, when you wake up, just think, what can I do for others today? How can I be nicer? How can I contribute to my neighborhood, to my family? How can I be nice to my partner or to my neighbors or to my friends? Things like that, very, very simple, but it's just a change of perspective. And I think that this can make a tremendous difference. Of course, there are also some very practical suggestions in my book as well. For example, do more things in synchrony with others. There is an amazing effect what synchrony actually has on us. That, for example, when we do things in sync with others, the boost of those social hormones that we get out of it is actually double. So for example, when you dance with other people and when you sing with them, it makes you feel connected and releases all the social hormones that have beneficial health effects for you, such as endorphins, which are natural painkillers. But when you do it in synchrony, the effects are double. So for example, choir singing or dancing, line dancing, or this kind of Macarena time of dancing is actually doubly good for us, which, you know, you could try choir singing over Zoom, I guess, if you really want to. So there are very, very practical tips out there as well for people to try.
This may not apply to my dancing, but it's a great, great tip.
The quality doesn't really matter as long as you try.
Well, again, I thoroughly enjoyed the book, and it's great to have the opportunity to talk with you. It's a great book, Growing Young, How Friendship, Optimism, and Kindness Can Help You Live to 100. Marta, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Joe.
Great. Thanks, Marta. Have a great day.
Thanks, Marta.
Thank you.
So, Dennis, are you ready to talk about your takeaways from our conversation with the author of Growing Young?
Yes, thanks. Marta was a phenomenal guest. So, to me, there were so many data points here, so I'm just kind of going to hit some of the highlights. When you asked her about where are some of us overinvesting and what are we underinvesting in, and she mentioned we're overinvested in diet and exercise, very focused on that. We're more underinvesting in purpose. When we talked about the surprises she saw in her research about the impact on change in mortality risk, wow, 49% decrease in mortality risk associated with a happier marriage, a 45% lower mortality risk associated with a strong social network. When she compared some of those to the traditional things that we think about, exercise and eating good fruits and vegetables were like 26% lower mortality risk, and exercise was a 23% lower mortality risk. So there's certainly something there in all that research. There's great data points. And finally, when you asked her about key habits you might recommend for people, and she said, change your perspective. Looking outside yourself and how you can connect with others is really powerful. Kindness, friendships, doing things in synchrony with others from a social perspective is very powerful. I love that she mentioned the dancing and the singing and all that. I think that was so great. I miss a big party. I miss a good party. That's for sure. Got to figure a way to do that on Zoom. But hey, these were all really great benefits, and really appreciate our time today. Joe, what about you?
Well, I thought it was a great book because it was eye-opening, some of the things that you highlighted in reviewing the research and interviewing a number of the scientists who conducted the research. But I look at it as it's not an either or, it's an and question, meaning nothing wrong with exercise and eating six or more servings of fruits and vegetables a day. Great things to do. Yeah. But there's these other things that aren't as popularly thought of because they don't have perhaps the educational resources or the marketing behind them. So I think she highlighted, really shone a light on a number of those. And the one I would like to just close with is something that we can all do because some of these things are really much more in our control than we think. And I had always been struck by a practice that goes back to Benjamin Franklin. And he really asked himself at the beginning of every day, what good can I do today? And at the end of the day, what good did I do today? And I liked what Marta said about really think about what can I do to help others today? How can I make someone say a little better? What can I do to show more kindness? So I think that's a good thing to end on and something that we can all start to incorporate more in our day because it helps others, but it also helps us too. Thanks for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. And we have some other new episodes coming up very quickly. Thanks again.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.